Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, September 22nd. Cut and flat bridge project on I-20 to begin next week. $25 million build grant helping pay for the improved interchange. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. Next week, a project to replace the Cotton Flat Bridge on Interstate 20 is set to begin. The Texas Department of Transportation reported this week that the project to tear down the existing bridge and replace it with a bridge that goes over Cotton Flat Road is scheduled to begin on Monday. Quote, a $25 million federal build grant is paying for part of the $68.5 million project, TxDOT reported. The build grant came with scheduling mandates, which is why TxDOT will have three consecutive overpass projects going simultaneously along the I-20 corridor in Midland County. The next phase of work will consist of service road improvements on either side of Cotton Flat, according to TxDOT. The work will stretch to State Highway 349 to the east and dovetail with the Midkiff project to the west. The service roads will be down to one lane in each direction. The north service road will be one-way westbound. The south service road will be one-way eastbound. In the first phase, a concrete barrier will separate traffic on the service road from workers widening the road to the inside. The Cotton Flat Bridge will remain open in this first phase. Once the frontage roads are widened to three lanes in each direction, the main lane traffic will be moved to the service road for construction of the new overpass that will carry I-20 main lanes over an improved Cotton Flat Road similar to the Midkiff Road Bridge project to the west, TxDOT reported. The existing Cotton Flat Road Bridge configuration and jug handle connections require a different construction approach than the Midkiff project and the County Road 1250 project, according to TxDOT. The existing Cotton Flat Bridge will be removed early in the project timeline. The existing bridge support structure needs to be removed to accommodate three lanes on the service roads. FNF Construction of Tempe, Arizona, won the Cotton Flat Bridge project with a bid of approximately $68.5 million. Project completion is expected in the spring of 2025. Governor Abbott addresses Texas's fentanyl crisis. Midland Police Department chief says department seized 10,000 pills in single operation. The story was written by Ben Schaffer. Midland Police Department Chief Seth Herman said Wednesday that during one routine patrol operation, officers seized more than 10,000 pills containing fentanyl. Quote, you can imagine how exponentially larger those seizures are when we expand into our narcotics trafficking units and investigative efforts, Herman added. Governor Greg Abbott wants to do something about the fentanyl crisis and met with local law enforcement Wednesday to discuss and detail his border security plan. The meeting was held at the Horseshoe, where Abbott sat down with Herman, Director of the Texas Department of Public Safety Stephen C. McCraw, Ector County Sheriff Mike Riffis, and other policemen and women. Abbott spoke about cracking down on gang activity in West Texas and the state in its entirety, especially as it relates to distribution of fentanyl. Quote, it has become clear that fentanyl is killing Texans without or with substance abuse problems, Abbott said. He said many victims of fentanyl poisoning are unaware they are consuming the dangerous substance. Most fentanyl in Texas is being transported from Mexican cartels and is laced within marijuana, pills sold as painkillers, anti-anxiety medication, or even candy, Abbott said. Abbott added a quote from the administrator of the Drug Enforcement Administration saying, quote, "Fentanyl is the single deadliest drug threat our nation has ever encountered. Fentanyl is everywhere," end quote. The governor said it can be found in small rural towns to large metropolitan cities across the country. He added a statistic from the Wichita Falls Police Department, which reported 3 deaths from what is believed to be fentanyl overdose last week, with the youngest victim being 13 years old. Quote, "The Midland Hospital, on average, has 1 fentanyl overdose every single day," Abbott said. He stated that Texas law enforcement this year alone has seized enough of the substance to kill every person in the United States. Abbott issued an executive order designating cartels as terrorists and to spread the word of the deadly drug to schools and workplaces. He also has sent a letter to President Biden and Vice President Harris demanding that they qualify cartels as terrorist groups and treating them as such. In his letter to the White House, Abbott quoted President Biden's executive order, where the president acknowledged the tens of thousands of deaths caused by fentanyl and claimed Mexican cartels facilitated and distributed the substance. Abbott's executive order claimed that drug cartels were responsible for trafficking fentanyl into the U.S. across the Texas border. His operation Lone Star, the order states, has seized more than 336 million doses of the lethal drug at the Texas border. Quote, "We will be working this next session to reclassify fentanyl overdoses as fentanyl poisoning. We will be looking to elevate to murder the charge of anyone who knowingly provides fentanyl to someone who loses their life because of it," Abbott said. Abbott claimed he learned in his meeting with local law enforcement that many distributors of the drug are teenagers in schools as it trickles down from cartels to sophisticated gangs and into towns and neighborhoods. Quote, "What we have been doing through Operation Lone Star with the Texas Department of Public Safety, as well as local officials, we've been seizing large amounts of fentanyl," Abbott said. Abbott claimed that the seizure Herman described earlier most likely saved 10,000 lives, but remarked that simply seizing the drug is not impactful enough, and it's time to crack down on the providers of the substance. Quote, "We want to disrupt their supply chains and do everything that we can to put them out of business," he said. MISD reports number of students increased this year. Data shows daily membership increased by 7.2%. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. Midland ISD is showing its greatest population for mid-September, going back to at least 2018. The district showed daily membership reached 27,816 on September 15th. That was greater than the 25,939 on September 19th, 2021, or an increase of 7.2%. Other September 15 school membership numbers reported included 24,887 in 2020, 25,293 in 2019, and 24,910 in 2018. MISD student enrollment for 2018-2019 was 26,183, according to the Texas Education Agency. In 2017-2018, the enrollment reported to the TEA was 25,716. MISD's numbers released this week also show a 4.6% increase in students in a little more than a month. This year, the increase was 1,242. In 2021, the increase from August to September was 1,365. Midland College Board okays tax decrease. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. The Midland College Board of Trustees lowered the college district's tax rate for the upcoming fiscal year to guarantee a lower tax bill. Midland College dropped the tax rate from 10.11 cents per $100 valuation to 8 cents per $100 valuation. That is a decrease of 20.9%, according to Midland College, since the appraisal increases are capped at 10% for taxing purposes. This means taxpayers will pay a lower tax bill to Midland College. But even using numbers of average home values around Midland, there will be a lower tax bill from the college. Using numbers provided by the City of Midland, the average home value inside Midland city limits was $295,000. Combined with a tax of 10.11 cents per $100 valuation, that resulted in college district taxes of around $298. For the upcoming fiscal year, the average home value inside the city, according to the Perryman Group, is said to be $325,000. Combined with an approved tax of 8 cents per $100 valuation, that would result in college district taxes of $260, nearly $40 less. At its regular monthly board meeting on Tuesday, September 20th, the Midland College Board of Trustees approved an 8 cent ad valorem tax rate per $100 of homestead value for the 2022 tax year for the Midland Junior College District. This is a decrease of 20.9% from the 2021 rate, which was slightly more than 10 cents per $100 of value. Quote, "The members of the Midland College Board of Trustees continue to be cognizant of overseeing policies that govern Midland College operations while maintaining a reasonable tax rate that ensures quality education and student services for our students, as well as important community services and enrichment activities," Paul Morris, Midland College Board of Trustees Chair, said. Quote, "Many thanks to the Midland community for their support of and investment in the college over the past 50 years.
Hello, this is Cindy. I'm continuing to read from the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Thursday. Man gets life for multiple child sexual abuse charges, by Mercedes Cordero. A 46-year-old man was sentenced Wednesday to 2 terms of life in prison after being convicted of multiple child sexual abuse charges, according to a press release from the Midland County District Attorney's Office. Jesus Trevino Castillo was found guilty this week by a Midland jury on 2 counts of aggravated sexual assault of a child and 5 counts of indecency with a child. Castillo chose to have his punishment assessed by 385th District Court Leah G. Robertson. Judge Robertson ordered life in prison for each of the aggravated sexual assaults, which will run consecutively, and 15 years each for the indecency with a child charges. The life sentences were the maximum possible punishment. The indecency with a child charges carried a maximum punishment of 20 years. According to the press release, Castillo will not start serving his second life sentence until he has completed his first life sentence. Under the law, he would not be eligible for parole on either life sentence until he had served at least 30 years of the sentence. As a result, Castillo must serve a minimum of 60 years before any possible release. Eligibility for parole doesn't guarantee he would be released, even after serving 60 years. All the remaining 15-year sentences will run concurrently along with the life sentences. Castillo was charged in February 2019 with multiple acts of sexual abuse against a child under the age of 14.
Weighing the benefits. Speaker looks at positive side of fossil fuels. When we think about fossil fuels or anything else, best-selling author and philosopher Alex Epstein says we need to weigh the benefits and side effects. Epstein was the keynote speaker Wednesday at the West Texas Geological Society Fall Symposium at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. Epstein also signed his new book, Fossil Future, Why Global Human Flourishing Requires More Oil, Coal, and Natural Gas, Not Less. The conference, which began Tuesday and ends today, drew about 460 people the first day. I think most people, even most supposed experts, thinking about these issues are ignoring the benefits of fossil fuels and dramatically overstating the side effects. That's our basic point of disagreement, said Epstein, who is based in Laguna Beach, California. Epstein said he got interested in fossil fuels in 2007. He founded the Center for Industrial Progress, a for-profit think tank seeking to bring about a new industrial revolution, in 2011. He also wrote The Moral Case for Fossil Fuels, the website said. We believe that human beings have the untapped potential to radically improve our lives by using technology to improve the planet across a multitude of industries, the site said. Epstein said he thinks electric cars are an exciting technology. I think they should just be offered on the free market and we can see how well they can do in terms of cost effectiveness, where they're currently behind, and how they can scale, because they have a lot of material requirements. But I'm friendly on the idea. I just am not friendly on forcing it on people, he added. Epstein said he doesn't think fossil fuels are going away anytime soon. No, they're definitely not. And I think if we try to make them go away in the U.S., they won't go away for other people. But we will be much less secure, Epstein said. Cameron Griffin and Ben Brayman, both of Endeavor Energy, thought Epstein's presentation was great. I've read his first book, but I've never seen him speak, and I thought he did a fantastic job of speaking. I really enjoyed it, Griffin said. Brayman agreed, just the clarity and being able to communicate with someone that's opposing oil and gas. I think just being able to have level ground and effectively communicate, Brayman said. If someone on the Green New Deal side was arguing with him, Brayman said it would be more likely that he would have a conversation that went somewhere. I really liked his holistic approach of evaluating the positives and the negatives, and that people really focus on those negatives to kind of exclude the positive side effects or benefits of hydrocarbons, Griffin said.
Make Midland ISD's superintendent search referendum on Ramsey by Stuart Doreen. In the end, former Midland ISD Superintendent Angelica Ramsey didn't leave for the money. The Fort Worth Report reported this week that Ramsey will make $335,000, which is a measly $25,000 greater than what she was making in Midland. In the end, it was clearly about the challenge of turning around one of Texas' larger urban school districts. In my time with the former school chief, that is what drives her, not the salary. Truth be told, however, if she continues to show turnarounds at school districts, the money will be there for her. Then again, so will the challenges. Midland ISD was lucky to have Angelica Ramsey come through the district, even if it was for a shorter period of time than some of us would have liked. She was entirely what we needed at a time when academic performance wasn't good. She hit the reset button with administration and did something that her predecessors were incapable of, finding high-level education leaders to help reshape what is happening at campuses around the city. Her arrival and subsequent impact in Midland were a credit to Rick Davis, Brian Murray, and the rest of the board members who hired her, worked with her, and ultimately let her take the reins and do what she needed to do with the restructuring of the central office, now the district service center, and changing of the calendar, among other things. In turn, the district got more accomplished in her 18 months that others couldn't do in twice the time or more. Now our community has the awesome opportunity to bring on another superintendent and continue the work taking place inside the district, and make no mistake about it, this is an opportunity. There will be some who claim we need someone who will be here for more than a cup of coffee, something I would agree with. However, what our community needs more is someone who will come in and make sure the system is everything it needs to be. This superintendent search might as well be a referendum on the work Ramsey did. If future board members believe the system she put into place is reflective of where the district needs to be, they must bring someone in who will continue the work and improve those areas where improvement is possible. All of Midland knows there will be people who have dogs in the fight. They might support a potential candidate because of their familiarity with the district they knew 10 or 15 years ago, or because that candidate is preferable to one side of town or the other. We also know that there are people who want the district like we knew it 25 years ago or back in the 1960s. What we know now is Midland has changed and will continue to change. The number of private schools and charter schools is greater. The demographics are different. White students make up 22.2% of Midland ISD's student population, according to the district. Hispanics dominate the student population, 65.7%. The percentage of economically disadvantaged students in one of Texas's most prosperous places per capita is 53.4%. What would I like to see? I want to see if the system Ramsey has installed has already provided Midland ISD board members the opportunity to promote from within. If not, let's make sure the next leader includes succession planning as part of the Midland ISD roadmap. Let's make sure the next superintendent is not a person that our district is dependent on. Let's make sure it is the system that is cohesive and puts academic outcomes ahead of everything else. Students and a successful system above all.
ECISD approves superintendent salary increase. The Ector County ISD Board of Trustees approved an increase for Superintendent Scott Murray's salary and extending his contract to June 30th, 2027. His salary will rise from $309,927 to $319,224.81 per year, which is a 3% increase, the same raise that was given to classroom teachers last year. Trustees also approved a total tax rate of 1.17792 per $100 valuation at its meeting Tuesday evening. An ordinance to that effect also was adopted. The total tax rate is the same as last year. However, the maintenance and operations rate is compressed to $1.05 per $100 valuation. Taxes are up 7.1% as property values have increased. A public hearing was opened, but no one from the public spoke. The interest and sinking tax rate, or debt service, is increasing from 12.6 cents per $100 valuation to 19.6 cents per $100 valuation. Chief Financial Officer Deborah Otmers said the 1.17792 per $100 valuation is the highest rate ECISD can have without an election. The approximate decrease in average homestead taxes is $49. Superintendent Scott Murray said the district can now pay off its bonds faster. Trustees voted 7-0 to redeem, pay off early, about $20.7 million of the Series 2013 bonds in order to save more than $7.7 million in future interest payments. These bonds cannot be paid off immediately. This resolution sets aside the money to do so once the board are callable later this year, the board recap said. Otmers said they still have $155 million in principal indebtedness. Approval of seven Chapter 313 appraised value limitation agreements during Tuesday's meeting could increase the district's tax base if the businesses go in. Trustees voted 7-0 to approve resolutions adopting the finding of facts and application for each of the seven projects, and voted 7-0 to approve agreements limiting appraised value of the properties for school district maintenance and operations taxes, pursuant to Chapter 313 of the Texas Tax Code for each of the 7 projects. The board recap said Chapter 313 agreements were created by the 2001 Texas legislator to allow communities to attract specifically defined companies, projects through limiting the school district's maintenance and operations, daily operations, taxable valuation for 10 years. The agreement remains fully taxable for INS debt service tax purposes at all times. The agreement stipulates the school district cannot be financially worse off by entering into the agreement. Industries eligible for Chapter 313 school property tax limitation include manufacturing, research and development, clean coal and other clean energy projects, renewable electricity generation, nuclear energy, computer data centers, Texas priority projects, those with a qualified investment commitment of more than $1 billion, the recap said. The land designated for use in these projects is undeveloped and currently brings in very little local tax revenue for the school district. The agreements of limited taxable valuations are offered as an incentive for the companies to select Ector County as its location to build and provide jobs. Without the taxable value limitations, the huge increase in value would likely make ECISD a property-rich district and require the district to send money to the state in recapture funds. School districts are limited to state local revenue per student, and hence no additional total funds would be gained by not approving the agreements. An important benefit is, in addition to INS tax revenue, these Chapter 313 agreements include M&O tax protection and supplemental payment from the companies which are not subject to recapture, nor state funding reductions. In the example of 1.5 LLC, the company's 6 proposed builds will pay ECISD millions of dollars in tax protection and supplemental payments over the next 25 years. Of course, there would be no tax revenue nor supplemental payments had the company chosen elsewhere to build, the recap said. Generally speaking, the state of Texas wants school districts to seek voter approval for bond building projects, so the additional revenue does not have any bearing on bond proposals presented to the citizens of Ector County. And again, the tax limitation is not granted for debt service funds that pay off bonds. In other business, trustees voted 7-0 to approve a data sharing agreement with Imagination Station Incorporated. iStation is conducting a study on the relationship between the scores of its iStation indicators of progress for reading and the NWEA measure of academic progress and the state's STAR scores. Voted 7-0 to approve the consent agenda. This month's consent agenda included minutes of previous meetings, bills for payment, acceptance of donations over $10,000, including $91,092 from Permian Strategic Partnership for staff housing supplement, $17,520 from the Education Foundation of Odessa for PHS grant project, 150 calculators, $12,500 from the Education Foundation of Odessa for a portion of ECISD grant writer salary. Also, an agreement with the Texas Virtual School Network, 3 annual contracts with greater opportunities of the Permian Basin Head Start, a resolution for extracurricular status for 4-H organization and adjunct staff members. Additional TTES appraisers for 2022-23. A memorandum of understanding with the University of Texas Permian Basin out-of-state travel for the Permian High School Theater to go to New York and the Permian High School Band to go to Orlando, and interlocal agreements with Purchasing Cooperative, Co-op. Special presentations included the recognition of volunteer Debbie McReynolds as the regional recipient of the State Board of Education Heroes for Children Award and the introduction of 14 students who have earned national recognition through College Board programs.
ECISD, student arrested after pulling knife during a fight, by Mercedes Cordero. An Odessa high school sophomore is facing a second-degree felony charge after being arrested Wednesday morning. Ector County ISD reported that two OHS students were involved in a fight before school started. One of the students pulled a knife, causing minor injuries to the second student. The student is facing an aggravated assault with a deadly weapon charge. Both students will face disciplinary consequences according to the Student Code of Conduct. On August 24th, ECISD police investigated a fight between two OHS students, one of whom was stabbed during the altercation. The student who was stabbed was transported to the hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. The district did not report any arrests in connection with this incident. Wednesday's incident marks the fifth arrest ECISD police has made since the start of the 2022-23 school year. School and school district leaders are once again calling on parents to help with these situations. Parents and school staff together must make sure students understand that fighting and violence are not the right way to settle differences. And this type of behavior can have long-term consequences in the form of discipline or criminal charges, the ECISD said in a statement. Schools must be a safe place for students to learn, and that will happen when all of us are working together to teach kids to handle conflict and deal with each other without violence.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, September 22nd, 2022. What's up with Midland? At the destination, Tall City Blues Fest, Saturday. At Hilton Garden Inn, West Texas Metaphysical Life Fair, Sunday. At the Horseshoe, Rayalana, Saturday through September 28th. Jake's Clays, Saving True Pairs and Pink the Basin, 10th Anniversary, October 7th. At Midland Beer Garden, Dueling Pianos, Friday, Legends of Hip Hop Karaoke, September 30th and October 1st. At Midland Community Theater, A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum in Maybe Theater 2, Friday and Saturday, September 30th, and October 1st. At Midland Humane Coalition, Furiesta Gala, October 22nd, Midland Shared Spaces, Dueling Piano Event, Thursday. At the Museum of the Southwest, Unbridled, The Art of Tom Lee, opening Thursday. The Terminator, Friday. Playdate, ages 0 to 2, 9 a.m. to 10 a.m., September 30th. Midland Downtown Farmers Market, 8 a.m. to 12 p.m., every Saturday. At Permian Basin Bookies Incorporated, Riders Workshop, October 8th and 9th. At Rolling Sevens Ranch, Backyard Bash, 2022, Saturday. At St. Anne's Catholic Church, St. Anne's Fair, Thursday through Sunday. At the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center, Distinguished Lecture Series Robert M. Edsel, September 27th. Kevin James, September 30th. Cinema Under the Stars, Hocus Pocus, October 30th. At Windwalker Farms, Black Gold Registered Shoot, Saturday and Sunday. Fast Facts, St. Anne's Fair and Carnival, by Morgan Taylor Thomas. A 74-year-old Midland tradition, the St. Anne's Fair and Carnival remains a community staple full of entertainment for everyone. Benefiting St. Anne's Catholic School and Church, the event includes 4 days' worth of pop-up rides, game booths, yummy food, and more. The Reporter Telegram spoke with Chairman Casey Hajovsky to get the scoop on what guests need to know before attending. Party days and times. The carnival portion, brought to Midland by family-owned and operated business Pride of Texas Shows, runs Thursday through Sunday. The St. Anne's fundraising fair will only run Saturday, Thursday 6 to 10 p.m., Friday 6 p.m. to midnight, Saturday 10 a.m. to midnight, Sunday 1 to 6 p.m. Tickets for the carnival and tickets for the fair remain separate and cannot be used interchangeably. Carnival. For Thursday and Friday, patrons can purchase a $25 armband, providing access to all rides. The armband remains valid from 6 to 10 p.m. and will stop being sold at 9 p.m. Saturday, the same day as the fair, armband prices remain $25 but will be split between day and evening validity. The morning band works from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. and will not be sold after 5 p.m., while the night band works from 6 to 11 p.m. and will not be sold after 10 p.m. For Sunday, the $25 armband works all day, 1 to 6 p.m., and will stop being sold at 5 p.m. If guests do not want to purchase an armband, single tickets will be available for $1 each. However, keep in mind, each ride takes 3 to 4 tickets. Fair. Admission into the grounds will be free and open to everyone to enjoy fair-based rides and fair-based foods. Customers must purchase $1 tickets. Note, Saturday's fair stands as the main day of fundraising for St. Anne's. Carnival and fair attractions. According to the Pride of Texas Shows website, the crew carries 15 rides, ranging from big players such as weightless centrifugal force experience zero gravity to family rides such as the racing super slide and carousel-esque Baja buggies found in the kiddie zone. Other rides include a drop tower known as Super Shot, ATVs, and more. As for games, Pride of Texas Shows prioritizes kids, designing their games with prize every time or play until you win aspects. Find more information at www.prideoftexasshowsinc.com. With more than 65 booths, fair specialties include face painting, smoke-free bingo, loaded with big prizes such as coolers, and the famous Odds and Ends garage sale, packed with household items such as strollers, wheelchairs, TVs, and kitchenware donated by community members. Friday night, Cody Canada and the Departed, a well-known American rock band, will take the stage from 8 to 10 p.m. Admission will be free, and fans must bring their own lawn chair or blanket. Drinks and food. Attendees can expect the classics during their time at the carnival: cotton candy, popcorn, curly fries, corn dogs, funnel cakes, slushies, and more. As for the fair, St. Anne's will be serving the following: aqua frescas, street tacos, quesadillas, funnel cakes, ice cream, hamburgers, hot dogs, turkey legs, barbecue sandwiches, street corn, snow cones, cotton candy, popcorn, and nachos. For drinks, they'll offer margaritas, beer, and wine. For the concert Friday night, food trucks will start serving bites at 5 p.m. So far, munchers can expect loaded dishes from Brown's Barbecue, authentic Jamaican cuisine from Jamin Niamins, cheesy goodness from Cane d'Oro Pizza, and possibly a snow cone establishment. Run or walk to the fair. One of the most anticipated events from the weekend extravaganza falls to Saturday's Run to the Fair, hosted by Midland Athletic Company. Designed for walkers, runners, and families, participants can choose between a 1K, 0.6 miles, 5K, 3.1 miles, or 10K, 6.2 miles distance to start their morning. For more information and to register, visit www.midlandathleticcompany.com. Packet pickup will be held from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Friday at 3326 North Midkiff. On race day, the schedule will be as follows: 8 a.m. registration, 8:50 a.m. blessing before the run, 9 a.m. 1K, 9:15 a.m. 10K, 9:30 a.m. 5K, 10:30 a.m. awards given to female and male first, second, and third place winners in the 5K and 10K. For any other information about St. Anne's Catholic School and Church, the carnival, or the fair, visit www.stannsparish.us.com/fair or call 432-682-6303. Community Roundup. Upcoming meetings. Commissioner's Court, 1:30 p.m. Thursday. Commissioner's Courtroom, 500 North Lorraine Street. City of Midland Job Fairs. The City of Midland Animal Services will host a job fair Friday at Animals Services Center, 1200 North Fairgrounds Road. The job fair is scheduled to take place from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Elections Office needs bilingual workers. The Midland County Elections Office is looking for bilingual workers to help with early voting. Those interested and able to speak English and Spanish can give the Elections Office a call at 432-688-4890. Three Flags Cook-Off. Join Social Octane for the second annual Three Flags Cook-Off, celebrating Canada, the U.S., and Mexico by showcasing their cuisines, cultures, and traditions, all accented by hilarious attire, according to Make-A-Wish in Midland. The cook-off will take place from 4 to 10 p.m. Friday at 2903 West Wall. It will consist of five award categories: Best Poutine, Best Hot Dog, Best Taco, Best Overall Dish, and Best Drink. This kid-friendly event will feature a fabulous multi-country game zone designed for all ages, with partial proceeds to be donated to the Make-A-Wish Foundation and the Orphan Well Project. Online, https://3flagscookoff.com/. 22-a-day walk and ride. The 22-a-day walk and ride event will be held Saturday at the VFW Post 4149 at 409 Veterans Air Park Lane to bring awareness to veteran suicide. The event will include a walk to start at 9 a.m., lunch at 11 a.m., and the ride at 12:30 p.m. Walk registration is $20 and includes a t-shirt. For those participating in the walk, the meal is $5, and a pin can be bought for $5. Texas Size Garage Sale. Senior Life Midland will have its Texas Size Garage Sale from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. October 7th and 8th and 11th and 12th at 407 East Scarborough. There is a VIP shopping experience where people can get a sneak peek of the items. That will take place September 20th from 5 to 8 p.m. The cost is $50. Call 432-689-6693 for more information. Scholarship for Writers workshop. There will be a full ride scholarships to students in West Texas high schools, colleges, and the University of Texas Permian Basin, as well as to four teachers of English or deserving youth to the annual Writers Workshop, October 8th and 9th at Midland College. For a full list of events and participating authors and agents, go to https://pbbookies.com/permian-basin-writers-workshop/. Calendar. Lions Pancake Breakfast, 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday at the Midland Downtown Lions Club, 200 Plaza Street. UTPB Distinguished Lecture Series presents Robert M. Edsel, 7 p.m. September 27th at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Writers Workshop, October 8th and 9th at Midland College. Pink the Park, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. October 15th at Centennial Park. 33rd Annual Tom Arnold Memorial Fish Fry, 5 to 8 p.m. at the American Legion Building, 501 Veterans Air Park Lane. Midland Northside Lions Club's 19th Annual Roar with Laughter Hilarity Review Fundraiser, 7:30 p.m. October 15th at the Hispanic Cultural Center. West Texas Women's Symposium, October 19th and 20th at the Bush Convention Center.
Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, September 22nd. Douglas Alfred Miller was born January 11th, 1940, and passed away on September 20th. Funeral service for Doug will be held on Friday, September 23rd at 10 a.m. at Pecos Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will follow at Mount Evergreen Cemetery. He was preceded in death by his parents, Buck and Edith Miller, his grandparents, Mr. and Mrs. D.D. Dean, his sister, Sis Miller, and his brother, Mikey Miller. Doug is survived by his loving wife of 45 years, Glenna Miller, his daughter, Dina Ann Miller-Jones, and her husband, James Jones, his son, David Allen Miller, their wonderful mother, Barbara Nelson, who gave him his precious children, his stepchildren, Trey and Amy Miller, Jim and Trudy Miller, and Robin Miller-Paul and Toby Paul. He is also survived by grandchildren. Everyone is invited for a time of fellowship at the Pecos Valley Country Club following the funeral service. Services are entrusted to Pecos Funeral Home. John Lamar Bullard, age 51, of Midland, passed away on Monday, September 19th. The family will receive friends on Friday, September 23rd at 1 p.m. with a celebration of life to follow at 2 p.m. at Nally Pickle and Welch Chapel. The family and friends will be raising a glass to John at their home after the service. John was born on November 25, 1970, to Melba and Johnny L. Bullard in Atlanta, Georgia. John grew up in Georgia, graduating from Fitzgerald High School in Georgia in 1989. John had worked in the oil and gas industry with multiple companies since 1994, but he was a petrophysicist at EOG Resources for the last 5 years. John is survived by wife Ashley Johnson Bullard, son Gareth Bullard, his girls Elizabeth Johnson and Mary Grace Johnson, his other parents Richard and Marguerite Johnson, his great-nephew Grayson Holcomb, and many cousins, aunts, and uncles. He is preceded in death by his parents, Jimmy and Bonnie Bullard, of Fitzgerald, Georgia. In lieu of flowers, the family requests you help Ashley fulfill a promise made to John to make sure Gareth graduates from North Carolina State University. A college fund has been created at PayPal for this fund. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Wanda Lee Harris, age 91, of Midland, passed away peacefully on Sunday, September 18th. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, September 24th, at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Wanda was born on May 28, 1931, in Kittaka, Texas, to Lee and Lillian Gregg. She married the love of her life, Cecil Bernard Harris, on January 21, 1950. They were happily married for 65 years. Wanda is survived by son Terry Harris and wife Debbie, daughter-in-law Jerry Harris, 5 grandchildren, 10 great-grandchildren, and 7 great-great-grandchildren. Wanda is preceded in death by her husband, Cecil Bernard Harris, Jr., sons Jerry Harris and James Harris, brother Dennis Gregg, parents Lee and Lillian Gregg. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Scott Orson, age 55, of Midland, passed away on September 20th. Graveside interment will be held at 1 p.m. Saturday, September 24th, at Resthaven Memorial Park. Celebration of Life will be held at 2 p.m. Saturday, September 24th, at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel, with a reception following at the branch at NPW. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Teresa Terry Lura, age 62, of Midland, passed away on Thursday, September 15th. Viewing will be Friday, September 23rd, from 12 p.m. to 9 p.m., with a rosary to be recited at 7 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Funeral service is set for Saturday, September 24th, at 11 a.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Chapel. Arrangements were made with Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Thursday, September 22nd. Odessan gets life plus 20 in sexual assaults. An Odessa man who lied about his age to a 16-year-old Odessa girl in order to carry on a months-long sexual relationship with her was sentenced to life in prison Wednesday in the 161st Ector County District Court. Although sexual assault of a child normally carries a prison sentence of 2 to 20 years in prison, prosecutors sought 2 life sentences because Joel John Valdez, 27, was on probation at the time of the offense in another rape case involving another 16-year-old child. Theoretically, the jury could have determined the earlier rape conviction was not true and chosen to give Valdez a prison sentence of 2 to 20 years on each count. Retired Judge Tryon Lewis opted to run both life sentences concurrently, but consecutive to the 20-year sentence he imposed in the earlier rape case. The earliest Valdez could be released from prison is 36 years from now. If the parole board opts to give him parole in both cases at the earliest moment possible. Under Texas law, defendants have to serve 50% of their sentence, or 30 years, which even is higher, before becoming eligible for parole. The 36-year time frame also includes roughly 4 years he's been in custody awaiting trial. On Monday, the girl testified she was a high school freshman when she met Valdez via Snapchat in August 2019. She said they had sex for the first time the day before she turned 16, and at the time she believed he was 18. She testified that over the course of the next several months, She would sneak him into her bedroom when her mother was asleep, and he hung out there while her mother was at work and she was at school. The girl told jurors they had unprotected sex nearly every day, even after she found out he was actually a 24-year-old convicted sex offender, because she believed herself in love with him. She only broke up with him after discovering he was cheating on her with another 16-year-old. It took the jurors less than 15 minutes to convict Valdez Tuesday. During closing arguments for the punishment phase Wednesday, prosecutors Ricky Ernest and Courtney Williams reminded the jurors of everything they've learned about Valdez throughout the course of the three-day trial. According to witnesses and court documents, jurors learned Valdez was sexually abused by an uncle who later went to prison for the offense. Valdez committed his first sexual assault of a child at the age of 10. He was placed on 2 years probation in November 2006 and ordered to participate in sex offender treatment, but 1 year later was placed in a secured facility because he was having issues at school and at home. He was again ordered to participate in sex offender treatment. Valdez was released on probation after 7 months in the facility and was convicted of indecency with a child in 2009. He was ordered to serve at least 2 years in juvenile prison, but his stay was extended to 4 years. He was released from the prison, sent to a halfway house, and then released in May 2013 at the age of 17. 3 months later, a 16-year-old girl accused Valdez of holding her down while his brother, her boyfriend, raped her on her backyard trampoline. He was sentenced to 10 years deferred adjudication in that case in May 2016. And the events of the current case occurred October 2019 through the spring of 2020, when he was 24. The girl in the 2013 case testified Tuesday that Valdez actually raped her too. Jurors also heard from the girl Valdez was cheating on the 2019 victim with. Like the 2019 victim, she too met Valdez on social media when she was 16. He gave her a false name and said he was 18. She testified that, like the 2019 victim, they had unprotected sex multiple times. In discussing all of Valdez's crimes, Williams told jurors, "Those aren't decisions that happened to him. Those are decisions he's made." She also told jurors their sentence wasn't just about Valdez, but it was about the victims and sending them a message about their worth. During his closing argument, defense attorney Philip Wildman said he doesn't know what to do about Valdez and suggested society doesn't either. He urged them to take their time and make sure of everything, because no matter how they feel about his client, he's still a human being, he said. "Y'all are the fact finders," he reminded them. During their deliberations, the jury asked for and received the court documents prosecutors had proved Valdez's conviction in the 2013 case, including the document he signed when he pleaded guilty. A crime scene analyst with the Odessa Police Department testified his fingerprints on that document matched recent fingerprints taken from Valdez.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.